Hey, everybody. It's Tayshia. Happy, happy holidays. What you are about to hear has never been heard before on this podcast. It's been heard elsewhere, actually, a whole lot, millions of times, actually. And it is the tale of the best laid plans of mice and melodica players. It begins with the Rite of Spring, and it ends with a Nutcracker. Sit back, let it wash over you like the warm breath coming from the melodic player's mouths, only at a safe distance and imaginarily, because otherwise that could be very dangerous at this point in time. And don't forget to subscribe to, rate, and review the show wherever you listen. And this episode is brought to you by Maestro Classics. Here we go. There's a rumor going around that classical music can be hoity-toity. But here in the classical classroom, we beg to differ.
Beethoven 5.
The idea that classical music is a zone where we have to feel restricted or we have to act in a certain way, you know, that's not going to be helpful going forward.
Isaiah is shaking with excitement. Oh,
I mean, there's just so many great parts of the opera.
He asked me to play his favorite spot in the first movement of the Brahms. And then he said, I started using those licks in my guitar solos.
How to be classical music rock stars, because there's not enough of that in this business.
Occasionally, I would plug in the mandolin to my distortion pedals.
I don't change my voice.
And talking to classical
I'm playing classical music now. I mean, it's the same 12 notes. That's what's so cool about it.
I'm Tayshia Clay, a classical music newbie, and I'm trying to learn all I can about the music. Come learn with me and the classical music experts I invite into the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Tayshia Clay, and here with me today is Tristan Clark. He's a trumpet player who studied at the Peabody Conservatory and who graduated from Juilliard. He's a Yamaha artist who's played for major symphony orchestras and has worked with the likes of Itzhak Perlman, Michael Tilson Thomas, and Alan Gilbert, whose name I'm probably mispronouncing, which begs the question, what happened? Because Tristan is now known as one of the members of the Melodica Men, where he plays on a toy instrument with his duo partner, Joe Buono. Tristan, welcome to the Classical Classroom.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's set this up. So before 2016, which is when this whole Melodica Men thing got started, what was your professional life like?
My professional life was pretty recent because I was a recent graduate from Juilliard. And right after that, I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina to play second trumpet in the Charlotte Symphony. So I was doing that. My whole life revolved and still does revolve around the trumpet. But it was very sort of typical in that sense. You know, I got an orchestra job. I loved my job. I was there for 1 year. And then I got the principal trumpet job in the Jacksonville Symphony, and that's where I live now. And I've been there this is my fifth year here.
So what happened to bring the melodica into the mix? You sound like you had like a perfectly normal life as a trumpet player. So why the melodica?
Then everything went wrong. Let's see, where to begin? Well, I think it's a good place to start with Joe and I. You know, we met at Peabody while we were studying. I was studying trumpet and he was studying bass trombone. So we were, you know, brass buddies, and we would practice in the same practice room and all kinds of chaos like that and hang out all the time. And so we became very close friends from doing festivals and school together. And then I moved to Juilliard and we sort of stayed in touch. And then I moved to Charlotte and we were still, you know, talking every once in a while. And I invited him to come down to Charlotte to visit me. And I said, why don't you come down? We'll have a great time. And I didn't even know what a melodica was at that point. And he had just sent me a really raw homemade video of himself like dancing around playing like a Britney Spears song or something on a melodica. And I was just very confused by that. And I didn't know what it was, but I said, you know, hey, bring that thing, that toy, whatever it is, you know, bring that when you come down to Charlotte. So he brings his melodica and immediately I try playing it and it was actually love at first sight. It was so much fun for me to play, and it was so intuitive for me because, you know, I'm a wind player, so I've got, like, the breath, you know, technique, breath control, and I'm used to you know, playing short notes and articulating with my tongue and stuff like that. And I also can play the piano. So it was very natural for me because it's got a piano interface. So that summer, it took like, you know, 20 minutes after me playing it to buy my own. And I was like, I need this. So I bought my own melodica, and it showed up in the mail when I was still in the Charlotte Symphony. And in May of that year, I think Joe came around April or March, and in May I had an audition for the Jacksonville Symphony for principal trumpet, and I really wanted to get it. So I was like, I had my new melodica, and I was like, you know, if I mess around with this and start playing with this right now, I'm not going to put it down. So I'm just not going to touch the melodica until my audition is over, you know, for better or for worse, because I need to focus. And so I had my audition. I won, which is great. And then I played melodica all summer, just alone in my house, mostly, just like in a bathrobe, you know, just playing Disney songs. And I would... Joe and I would, you know, we'd be on FaceTime for literally hours sometimes, just playing random stuff at each other, whether it was chords or like we'd make a joke about some song. I don't even know. So that's sort of where everything went crazy in my life with the melodica. And then that same summer, I was going to go to Seattle to spend some time with my family and dog sit. And Joe, I invited him to come along. I said, let's bring our melodicas. We'll have a great time. And so he came with me, and we were playing, you know, Disney songs on the back deck and just sort of messing around, playing stuff all by ear. We didn't have actual sheet music, you know, so it would take us, you know, some time to figure it out. But we did that, and we became outrageously confident in our ability to play these Disney love songs. And we were like, let's hit the streets, you know, show people what we're made of. And that's what we did. And we went out to Pike Place Market in Seattle. I don't know if you guys know that, but it's a big tourist trap in Seattle.
It's down the street from me. I'm here in Seattle. And
yeah. Oh my God.
And
oh, no way.
Yeah.
It's so cool. My family lives on Vashon Island.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Do you know Vashon Island?
Yeah. I do. Yeah. Everybody's referring to West Seattle as East Vashon now because the bridge is out. So
really,
yeah, the big bridge that connects. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So anyway, but like Pike Place is down the street, and yeah, it's super touristy. So you busked at Pike Place Market.
Yeah. And there were tons of people walking around, and we played on the street, and we would play all kinds of music from like, you know, we play some classical music. We're both classical trained and classical musicians, but like we didn't really play tons of classical at first. We would play some light classical stuff, but we would play a lot of video game music and pop and, you know, movie stuff, you know, stuff that people knew and connected with. So we played on the street and people just went crazy. And, you know, we're playing for tips and for like $1 bills. And after 10 days of doing that, just playing on the street, we made $2,000. So
you did not.
I swear, it was crazy. It was, you know, people were giving us all the $1 bills. So it was a lot of $1 bills. And we actually went to the bank afterwards to like deposit it. And yeah, we went to the bank with a giant bag of $1 bills. And we were there for like 30 minutes at an ATM depositing this stuff. And after a while, a security guard comes. He's like, guys, what are you doing? This looks unbelievably sketchy. I was like, yeah, sorry about it, but I swear it's because of music. It's not drugs. So he left us alone, but I don't blame him because it did look sketchy.
So you just set up shop, started busking, people were throwing cash at you.
Yes, $1 bills in large quantities, I guess.
I'm guessing this gave you like a boost of confidence in your abilities.
Well, it was hilarious, and we just had a great time. And that was kind of our first time in our lives where, as musicians, we were focusing more on the audience than on ourselves. Because as a musician, you know, when you're playing the trumpet is a complicated instrument. You know, the piano is a complicated, difficult instrument. The melodica is pretty basic. It's made of plastic. You know, it's, you kind of just add air. Obviously, you still need to, like, be able to play it or whatever, but it's a very simple instrument compared to other instruments. So, you know, usually I'm playing, you know, trumpet in the orchestra or whatever, and I'm you know, really having to focus on what I'm doing and like the sound that I want to hear and how it fits in with the group and stuff like that. And orchestra music is very complex usually, so, or it can be. So you really have to be super focused and engaged on what you're doing. Whereas when we were doing this melodica stuff, you know, it was just two people, so we didn't have to worry about like playing together because we could play well together, you know, because we had played together on brass instruments many times. And we were mostly paying attention to the energy that people were giving us, or like if they were paying attention to us or not, you know. And so we would just kind of target people like, oh, that person's wearing a dinosaur shirt. Like, let's play Jurassic Park at them, you know.
Or something. My God. This is great.
It was crazy.
And also it's making a lot of sense. Like, after watching your videos, there's a real performative element to what you guys are doing. And by that, I mean you're dressed up in costumes as
and making funny faces and just moving a lot, you know.
Yeah.
These are the things we learned, our whole shtick, I guess, like you see in the videos.
Like work in the streets.
Work in the street corner. at Pike Place Market.
But how did you get from busking at Pike Place Market to going, hey, we should post some videos of this?
Sure. We had sort of an idea to do a video online presence thing. We just didn't take it that seriously at first. But we figured we were together in Seattle, might as well make some goofy videos or whatever. So we made some really raw videos, you know, just like in on Vashon playing, you know, the Little Mermaid or whatever, Mulan, where, and we started, that was the first time we wore any costumes. I have this kimono looking thing, you know, this really cool robe, and I put it on, and then Joe put on something else that was similar like that, and we just played Mulan for whatever reason. And from then, we actually took our $2,000 that we made in tips from the 10 days, and we flew to Paris because my dad lived there, and I was going to go visit him, and I was like, Joe, come with me. So we went to Paris. We did the same type of thing in Paris, playing on the street, and that was great. After our Paris trip, then we came back to the United States and we had to sort of get back to real life and taxes and work and those kinds of things. So the dream of Melodica Men and how much fun we had was basically over in our minds, because I was moving to Jacksonville. Joe lived in Baltimore. And so it's like, well, you know, we can't really do this. And then by some weird stroke of luck and serendipitous, you know, force, whatever, Joe ended up moving to Jacksonville and living with me. And we were hanging out and we had our melodicas, and a friend of ours was there who also had a melodica because we're all super cool. And we were playing random stuff at each other. We were just playing random things. So like, improvising, I guess you could call it, but it was just us having fun, laughing about funny sounds or whatever. And someone played a passage that sounded vaguely like Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. And that triggered me. And I was like, oh my God, how crazy would it be if we played Rite of Spring on three melodicas? So, Daisha, do you know Rite of Spring?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, all right, yeah. It's, you know, crazy insanity, and
there it is.
Ooh. Wow. That guy sounds good. Unbelievable sound. Whew.
This is...
Yeah.
The famous Stravinsky piece that, as I've learned on this show, like drove audiences literally crazy, or at least that's the myth, that it drove audiences crazy back in the day when it came out, because it gets all raucous and it's about like spring waking up and
starting riots.
All that.
To this day, apparently it's still starting riots with melodicas, but
so you guys do this on, you're playing it on melodica, and you film this.
Yes.
And so you're like, we should put this on YouTube. This is amazing. We're amazing. And then
we didn't think we're amazing. No, that was not the thought. But we had put on a couple of videos before. You know, we had a Facebook page. You know, we had like 500 people following us, mostly just our friends and family. And yeah. we posted these little videos, and they were silly or whatever. But the most views we had a video of us playing "Isn't She Lovely" in a cab. In Paris. And so there's this French guy driving, and we're just jamming, adorable. Playing "Isn't She Lovely." And it was such a great vibe. And that was totally what Melodic Men was and is. You know, it's just like us. We have these portable instruments. We just, they don't, no one knows what they are. No one knows what they sound like, you know, and we play them and just jam and have fun. And it was a great vibe. So that video had 4,000 views, and that was our biggest hit at the time, and that was fine. You know, we were just, that seemed like a lot, you know. When was the last time 4,000 people saw me do anything? You know, so it was very exciting. And then, yeah, Writer Spring, that's when we were like, wow, what if we did this video? And so it was very quick, the turnaround between when I first had the idea of like, oh my God, let's do this. Let's try and make an arrangement of it, and let's make it short and sweet and post it online. So that happened. The whole span of that was like 2 hours between when that first idea happened and then the video was finished. We just took up a score of Rite of Spring online, and we were transposing, you know, clarinet parts in A and all this craziness, you know, all this complicated transposition, and the score is a nightmare to read. And we were just trying to make sense of it and make a little video of it. So we made an 89-second video, and the next day we posted it. And in less than 24 hours, it gets 1.5 million views. You know, obviously my life is shattered in that moment. And it was, you know, Joe and I were so overwhelmed and enthusiastic and, yeah, very overwhelmed. But it was a very special day for us, because that was our first ever hit, you know, if you will call it that. Mm-hmm. Because it was in one day, you know, 1.5 million people. That was just unfathomable for us, because we were just these little clowns. And I was wearing like a Juilliard shirt, you know, and it was sort of a, you know, people were making jokes about it, because it was obviously like these three guys playing Rite of Spring on melodica is weird enough. But I'm also wearing a Juilliard shirt, and it just, they were saying like, oh, I guess this is what Juilliard grads do these days, you know, stuff like that. And then we started hitting our market.
Clearly, you touched a nerve with it. But you've got, and I was looking through your YouTube channel, which, you know, you've been doing all this time since, and like, there's an amazing array of stuff up there. And it seems to me like you guys have kind of, it's like you really just leaned into the whole performance of it, but have also done the, I feel like sometimes people do that. They lean into something and they're like, oh, we've hit on something. And then there's this sort of, what's the word that I'm looking for? It's like you start to smooth out the hard edges and everything becomes very slick, but you guys have kept it real. I mean, you did another Rite of Spring where you're dressed as what appears to be cavemen.
That's right.
And it's just the two of you. And then there's the Super Mario Brothers. And it looks like this is like all homemade, is it?
We have committed to the shtick. But yes, it is unbelievably homemade. You know, it's funny. We've tried, you know, because I know there are so many, you know, YouTubers who they have like really highly produced videos with like, you know, different angles and shots and cuts and, you know, music videos where they're like overdubbing themselves and they're like outside and they've got like a camera crew or whatever. And, you know, we were like, like maybe we should try that. And so we sort of tried that with, we did a video of the Pirates of the Caribbean, and it was in 4K, and it was like, I thought it was really funny because it was like a, we did some like stupid little shtick things in it also that I thought were funny. And we posted it, and that was after we had been consistently getting millions of hits on YouTube and Facebook or whatever. And it got no attention. Like, no one cared about it, you know?
So that's because there's something, like, lovely and raw about this just straight-ahead view. This, like, single-camera view of the two of you sitting at a table, and only when, like, the only thing that changes is what your background is and what costumes you're wearing and what the music is. And it's, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a formula that, like, is clearly working. How do you... We should talk about... The music that you've been picking, you clearly went from this 1.5 million views to melodica stardom, and were featured on like the Gong Show, and you were on America's Got Talent and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Crazy.
And like clearly this is a thing now. But
yes,
how
it is,
do you,
apparently.
Now that it is a thing in your life, how do you as a duo who are now like seriously picking music and you're arranging, I think, the pieces, like, what's your process? How do you do all of that?
Sure. Yeah. Great questions. A lot of that is done actually a lot of, in terms of the music that we choose. That's really important because what we think about there's three things that we think about when we're envisioning our next video project or whatever, because it's a lot of work to arrange them and to learn the parts. We memorize everything, so it's really a big commitment. So we have to just see what's going to be the best use for our market of the people who follow us, and what kind of stuff do they want. One way of finding out is asking them, you know, on Facebook, whether it's through a poll. Lots of times we'll go Facebook Live and we'll like do little like a jukebox impromptu thing where we'll take requests and try and, you know, fart through them, and it sounds terrible, but we do that. And if people ask for a certain song or a certain piece of music a lot, that means to us, okay, you know, people are asking for this a lot, so maybe we should do that. Maybe we could consider making a full video of that. Now, well, I mean, obviously COVID's different, but we've been doing the videos for about 4 years, and we really hit our market with the classical stuff with Rite of Spring, and then we were doing, you know, bigger medleys of just famous classical things, and then we started going into movies. We did Star Wars, which got 25 million views and, you know, was crazy.
Amazing, first of all. It's the Star Wars the medley, and it's like this video at one point you put on a Darth Vader helmet, and which appears to have another tube attached to it. Talk me through
that.
Right. What happened there?
Yeah, that was a tough one to nail because it was there were so many logistics. I've done that before also in Super Mario. I did that where I put on a Bowser mask and I played the bass melodica, which is a thing, surprisingly. And it sounds kind of horrible, but it's funny, so who cares? And so I went down, you know, like below the table, because we were standing up at a table, actually. And then I, you know, just like crouched down. I put the mask on and we had a whole like, so I had a tube in my mouth basically when I put the mask on. And so I had to put both tubes in my mouth in order to play two melodicas. So it's like really hard to do. And I was like, you know, well, and I can't see cause I've got the helmet on, and it was a nightmare, but I thought it was funny.
But it sounds,
you know,
amazing.
So.
It sounds
it
so
worked.
Good. Like there's not, you know, a break in the music.
So there's that. And then we started doing video game stuff, Zelda, which I have played the Zelda games all my life and I love them. And those are getting millions and millions of views. So we used to just be like classical music nerds knew about us. But now, like, a lot of people know about us, you know, because of the, you know, Super Mario has, like, we have, like, 40 million views on YouTube and Facebook combined from just that video. It's crazy. And so no one knows that we are classical or anything. But they do, I think you're right that they do, like, the raw sort of homemade thing, because everything is made with an iPhone. Everything. So.
Yeah, and it looks like it, but in a good way.
Yeah.
And now we're going to take a little break from my conversation with Tristan Clark for some words about our sponsor. This episode of Classical Classroom is sponsored by Maestro Classics, creators of Stories in Music. It's a fun recorded series made for kids and families that has received over 50 national awards, and it's garnered praise from parents, grandparents, teachers, pets, children, neighbors alike. Featuring the London Philharmonic Orchestra, each Maestro Classics album brings musical stories to life with the help of a narrator, educational tracks featuring the orchestra's conductor, and a fun activity booklet with illustrations, puzzles, games, and fun facts for kids and dishes. Spread cheer this holiday season with a Nutcracker from Maestro Classics is guaranteed to put you in the holiday spirit. The Nutcracker album makes a wonderful gift, stocking stuffer, or a fun educational activity for grades K through 8 and beyond. Learn more about this album and Maestro Classics' other 12 albums, including Peter and the Wolf, Swan Lake, Mike Mulligan and his Steam Shovel, and more at maestroclassics.com. And for Classical Classroom listeners only, get 17% off your order of any full-priced item with coupon code CLASSROOM when you visit Maestro online at maestroclassics.com. And now let's get back to my conversation with Tristan Clark. What got me as a viewer slash listener of this was that, you know, it's a toy, it's a plastic toy, but the way that you guys are playing it is so impressive. It's like watching, right. And I think that maybe what's so fascinating is that it's like virtuosic playing of a toy.
Right.
And it's like, which is,
I think you're right,
just as fascinating as watching you play like an orchestral instrument of some sort, you know? It's like,
yeah, it's really, I think really, you totally nailed it. Yeah. Because the sort of, like, shtick and, like, the joke or, like, the costumes and all that visual stuff, that's cool and fine. But, like, if there was no substance of quality behind it, no one would care for more than 5 seconds, you know? Mm-hmm. They would get over it really quickly. And what you were asking before about when do we know what pieces to play, the three categories are, we want it to be very recognizable, we want it to be virtuosic, if possible, and we want it to... We want to have some sort of idea for what it's going to look like, if there's going to be props that we can do that are funny, or, you know, a funny backdrop or funny costumes. Like, so those are the three things. And to give you an example, we just did Flight of the Bumblebee a couple months ago, and that was a perfect one because it's virtuosic. It's Flight of the Bumblebee. Everyone knows it, you know, and we were bumblebees, you know, we dressed up as bumblebees. So we had all kinds of options with that. So those are our, that's our criteria.
Ooh. Oh my God.
Wow. Nice job, Joe. I make sure to give him all the hard parts.
That is unbelievable. Wow. So, okay, so now is when I would love for you to teach me what it is that one needs to know about the melodica. Like, how does it work? Where did it come from? Et cetera.
Where did it come from?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure the answer to that one. No, it's there's a company, a German company called Hohner, and they make harmonicas, I believe, and they also they invented the melodica. And as far as I know, so the melodica is for the people who can't see, it's a little keyboard, and you blow into it in one side, and it's very interesting because you actually, in order to play it, you need you can't just press the keys down. So when I hit the keys, no sound comes out. You have to have air or else there will be no sound. So when I press down, when I blow air and press down keys, then it will make a sound. So it's a wind instrument and there are tiny little reeds inside the instrument. So behind each key, there's a little metal reed and it vibrates once air passes through it and it rings at a certain pitch or whatever. And one of the reasons the melodica is so, like I said, we took very naturally to it because we are brass players and we know how to play with breath control and, like, you know, use vibrato or whatever. So you can even, you can use vibrato. You can do stuff like that. And you can also, it's sort of like a harmonica and a piano had a baby, this instrument, because it's got the keyboard, but it's got the reeds inside. So you know, it's kind of a harmonica-y vibe. And, oh, one huge thing that people don't always understand when they see us play it is that we don't play it the same way that you play a piano. First of all, the keys are smaller and shorter, so it's a little harder to, like, you know, really nail stuff. And I have big hands, so it doesn't help me. But with the articulation and playing fast notes, we can play really fast, but we don't hit the keys over and over again like you do on a piano. Because on a piano, if you're trying to play really fast repeated notes, you have to hit the keys. So that would sound more like this. And it's really easy to miss, you know, and hit wrong notes. But if you play it more like a trumpet, where you hold down the keys and you use your tongue to separate the notes, so I can go, okay, great. You get the idea. So that's one of the reasons melodica is so unlimited, because I can do really fast articulations. And that's really impossible on the piano. And that's one thing that, you know, being a trumpet player, it's really advantageous being able to do that. So
articulation is, it's just when you use your tongue to make the different notes, to make, like, staccato, like sharp notes.
Yeah.
And, okay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just, it's a pretty basic sound in terms of tone color. You can't really get many different sounds. You know, it's like, that's kind of the only sound you get. And, you know, that sounds as good as if you were to play it, too. That's another, it's a big instrument for children in music ed because it's so accessible and easy to play.
There's, like, not a lot of barrier to entry as far as, like, the real basics of what you need to play. It's not like you have to learn fancy fingerings or how to, like, when I played trumpet when I was a kid, you had to learn how to hold your mouth and not blow out your cheeks. And you don't have to do any of that with this. You can just sit down. Yeah.
On a brass instrument, it's so hard to make a characteristic sound. But melodica, you just go, there it is, you know?
There you go. So it's very, like, instantly gratifying. That's that's interesting. Yeah. So it gets this, like, it's got this really kind of unique bunch of characteristics about it.
And it can sound pretty good if you play chords down low. You can play, like, some full stuff down there. And we really take advantage of the low register and playing, you know, closed-voiced chords down there. They sound pretty good. So that's what we do.
I want to, because as we're recording this, it is nearly Christmas. Mm-hmm. And you guys have done a fair amount of Christmas music. Didn't you actually play live? Didn't you do a Christmas concert?
Oh, yeah. We've done many. Yeah, we do this thing with orchestra. We've done many things with orchestra, but for years we've done this like holiday pops kind of thing with orchestra, where we'll dress up as elves and Santa Claus will be Santa's elves, and he'll give us melodicas for Christmas, and we'll play, you know, the Nutcracker, and everyone's shocked because they don't expect anything from Santa's elves.
Let's do that Christmas song. Let's do that Christmas song.
It's a whole shtick, but it's very fun, and now we have we actually have a whole program with the orchestra where it's just us, and we sort of run the show, and we've been asked to do that with the BBC Symphony, and it was going to be in October, but it was canceled, or it was postponed because of COVID, which sucks, but it will be rescheduled at some other point.
Crazy. You're going to play
the BBC Symphony. It gets crazier, yeah.
That's bananas. So the Nutcracker. One other thing I noticed about your songs that and the pieces that you've got posted on your YouTube channel is that you have short arrangements of things.
Yep.
And yes. This is like the Nutcracker in 2 minutes, basically. Right. It's like 2 minutes and 11 seconds or something like that.
Yeah.
How did you, how do you boil the Nutcracker suite down to 2 minutes?
Yeah, well, that's really challenging. That's actually, Joe did most of that, the arranging throughout our time together. A lot of it has been Joe. He spends a lot of time. What he'll do first is he'll learn all the tunes on the piano, and he'll learn the chords, and he'll learn them all in the same key. So, and then he'll see if he can, like, you know, switch from one to another, envisioning, like, okay, you know, maybe if we speed up here, then we can do it, or we can do a hard cut off here, and then straight into the next number. So he's just trying to reduce it as much as possible, and I do the same thing when I'm doing my arrangements. Try and reduce it as much as possible, but include all the recognizable and cool and impressive parts. You know, that's what we try and do. And yeah, That's the arrangement process. It takes a lot of listening to it and just, you know, just sort of improvising on those pieces or whatever.
So it's like the coolest, best parts all boiled down into one. Do you think that as we're bringing this episode to an end, that you could play us either something from the Nutcracker or one of your favorite Christmas songs? Or both, I don't care.
Well, let's see, because I always play the second part on the Nutcracker, so Joe plays all the melody. So I can, like, kind of try and, you know, hack my way through it. I'll try. And it'll be very brief. And then I'll play a little bit of the Christmas song, because that's one of our favorites. Okay, here we go. Oh, God. I can't even see what I'm doing. I should get a tube. This is going to be catastrophic. All right. Oh, God. Oh, jeez. Ta-da!
It's beautiful.
That was rough because I can't see what I'm doing. That's why we play with the tube.
Oh, yeah.
We have tubes that's when right. We play. So I can actually
see
what I'm doing.
So you can see the keys. Yeah, that's hard.
I probably
hard.
Should have a tube for this. But anyways, and then we also play the Christmas song, which, you know, chestnuts on a whatever, open fire.
Yeah.
Chestnuts. Thank you. You should watch the video. It's much
that
better with harmony.
That's great. I've seen it, and it's beautiful.
We do those dresses. Yeah. It's actually kind of emotional playing that one, because it sounds, I don't know, when you use the right voicings and stuff, it does sound pretty good. But it's hard to play the melodica alone and sound good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why the duo works. Yeah, that's true.
It does.
Well, listen, Tristan, this has been so much fun. And I love that the entirety of what you're doing with melodica is kind of based on just having a good time. That's really...
Yes.
I mean, I think, like, there are a lot of really lofty and meaningful and worthwhile reasons to play instruments, to play music. But I like that fun is why you're doing this.
Fun is one of them. Yeah. Yeah. Come on. You know, huge.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. It was great to meet you and to get to learn about how this came to be. And
yes. To learn of about course. Well, thank you for having me. Thank you.
All right, everybody, that does it for this episode of Classical Classroom. For more Classroom, just head on over to our website, classicalclassroomshow.com, where you can find all of our episodes forever. You can find ways to connect with us, ways to support us financially, and best of all, ways to buy Classical Classroom t-shirts and stickers. You can put them anywhere. Don't forget to subscribe to, rate, and review the show wherever you listen. Thanks to Houston Public Media, birthplace of Classical Classroom. Thanks to Tristan Clark for being here today. Thanks to the official BB gun provider of Classical Classroom, Red Rider, with a carbine action 200-shot range model air rifle with a compass in the stock and this thing which tells time. Thanks to me for saying words, but most of all, thanks to you for listening. Ho, 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 happy holidays! Holidays! Okay, I'm done now. Bye-bye.